It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get first look at our most recent op-eds and our most recent podcasts. We will be rolling out a couple of really important things this weekend. In studio with me is millennial author. I always like to say millennial author because you guys get such a bad rap, and that is Alan Thomas. It's great to have you here.
As always, it's great to be back.
And you have a really important op-ed, Free to Be, and that will be rolled out in the newsletter this weekend, and then that will go to the website. People can find it all the time, but Free to Be, we're going to talk about this in segments 3 and 4. Did you ever dream that these would be the things that you'd be writing about in the United States of America?
I never dreamed we'd see the exact opposite example play out like it did this whole past year. So it is kind of sad, but at least there's great examples to talk about and hope for a better tomorrow.
Absolutely. We have to get our brains around these ideas, Alan, so that we can talk with our friends and our family and our colleagues about what is happening in our country. And I think that in a way, I don't know if it's that we've gotten lazy or we've self-censored about these important ideas and we think that maybe that might rile somebody's feathers, but we need to be able to talk in reasonable voices, but we need to talk.
Exactly. We need to become better salesmen for these ideas. And right now we like to lecture a little bit more than we like to sell. So,
good point. Good point. Okay, well, we'll talk about that in segments 3 and 4. Remarkable things happening in our country. This impeachment of President Trump is somewhat astonishing. They're basing this on the rally that was on January 6th. And in the second segment, we will be talking with a woman who was there and who actually went to the Capitol. Producer Steve, I know you're excited for that.
I am, because I want to compare with what she has to say. I have a family member from Pennsylvania who was also made the trip to Washington that day, and I want to compare their stories.
Okay, well, we'll be talking to her in the second segment, and we'll compare stories. Wanted to highlight our America's Veterans stories that will be airing this Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m., and it is something that I pre-recorded with Major General John Ron. I did several interviews with him. This is the first one. He's 98 years old, and he was on Omaha Beach the first day with the, was it the 5th Ranger Battalion? I think
yes.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny. It's amazing. I've already heard it because I put it, assembled the pieces. This gentleman's clarity of mind and voice is just, it's stunning. So, something to look forward to.
He remembers D-Day like it was yesterday.
Well, why not? I mean, yeah. What an event.
You know, and I have actually found that. I've interviewed, 150, 160 World War II veterans. And Alan, what I have found is that combat is a life-changing experience. And it's seared in people's memories. It's seared on their hearts. And they can recall it like it was yesterday.
I mean, these are the stories that my generation and generations to come need to look back at. They deserve the title of greatest generation ever.
And that's why we do this show, America's Veteran Stories. It'll be on Sunday afternoon, 3 to 4 p.m. You will not want to miss that. We'll be talking with Hal Van Herkey here in just a little bit. He is one of our sponsors, great partner of the Kim Munson Show. He's the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. We'll talk with Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, at the bottom of the hour. Our quote for today, I like to remind everyone, we're gaining more and more listeners all the time. Be sure and tell people about the show. We're live 6 to 7 a.m. They do rebroadcast us 1 to 2 in the afternoon, 10 to 11 p.m., as well as recaps and podcasts of the show are on my website within the next business day. We look at these issues, Alan, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force it. You should be, as you said, a good salesman and be able to talk about the merits of the idea and be able to sell that to other people.
And we need to have the right to disagree. And I don't, acceptance doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything that you say.
Well, wait a minute. I don't know if you're going to get invited back to the show then. No, we do, that's such an interesting point. We do disagree. The founders disagreed. But the things that we disagree big time on is government force. If you want to use government force to control my life, then maybe we don't agree to disagree, because that's not okay. We need to push back on government forcing all these things. And that's really kind of what your piece is about, your op-ed.
Right. Yeah. And to be fair, you can disagree with it. I just hope that the Constitution shackles down your ability to control my life through the force of government. And unfortunately, we've started to give that up, and that idea has started to pervade everything that we do so much that I don't think a lot of freedom thinkers understand how progressive some of their ideas or progressive tendencies that they may actually have, because progressivism has taken over our education, and our lack of civic knowledge has really eroded to a point to where we're even having this conversation.
That's why we need to have this conversation. So that'll be in segments 3 and 4. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people. Socialism, my friends, ultimately comes down to force. With all that's going on, I was looking for determination and perseverance quotes. Steve, you look like, before I jump in, okay, what?
I'm sorry. I'm staring here at a headline on my computer. We have been up to our eyeballs in calls for unity from different places, especially the Democrats. Here's this what this headline reads. Biden just announced his stimulus plan, and AOC already has a problem with it.
Oh, okay.
Where's the unity?
Where's the unity in that?
So I'm sorry. I'm just laughing at that.
Okay. Well, our quote for today, Mary Pickford. Do you remember who she is? I think you saw her first movie. She was known professionally as Gladys Louise Smith was known professionally as Mary Pickford. She was a Canadian-American film actress and producer with a career that spanned 5 decades. A pioneer in the American film industry, she co-founded Pickford Fairbanks Studios and United Artists and was one of the 36 founders of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. She was born in 1892. She died in 1979. And this is what she said. She said, "Today is a new day. You will get out of it just what you put into it. If you've made mistakes, even serious mistakes, there is always another chance for you. And supposing you have tried and failed again and again, you may have a fresh start any moment you choose. For this thing that we call failure is not falling down, but the staying down." And I've been looking for perseverance, determination quotes with what's going on. Alan Thomas, what do you think of that?
It's great. I mean, it's always good to know that there is the sun will rise tomorrow, and there's always hope for a better tomorrow, and you just have to pick yourself up. And especially now with all this, with our ideas under firm attack and freedom under attack from the left, it's good to know that there's always tomorrow.
Well, there is. And failure is not final. We need to remember that. And some of the most successful people, I mean, everybody has failures. Everybody falls down. And the important thing is getting back up. And that's something that really we need to teach that in our education system. We need to teach that to our children. And we need to remember that for ourselves as well, Alan.
Well, and failure is a good thing. And when you think through what government tries to do and what people want government to do, it's to prevent failure. They want to live your life for you. And they want to make your decisions for you so you don't have to necessarily fail. And that's the wrong way to think about it. I need to have that ability to learn from my mistakes and learn from life and learn from history.
Well, and it is the human condition that we will fail. And this, you've hit a really important point, and that is that I think people believe that government can come in and fix everything. And in your piece, you say, no, we shouldn't look to government. We need to look to ourselves. And our neighbors as well, but really to ourselves, Alan.
Well, each life is so different, and we bring so much to the table. You know, the things I may fail at, you would probably never struggle with. It's difficult to say that I can do something that will prevent your failures or even give you success when I don't even know where you're coming from or your past or your history. So it's a little short-sighted, I believe, to try and control people's lives that much, because you're not taking into account everything that's gone into their life.
Well, and what is Ronald Reagan said, the most dangerous words in the English language are, "So I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help." So let's go through just a few headlines here. And first one, let's see, from the Common Sense Institute, Colorado Politics reports that Colorado's unemployment trust fund is bad. And a day ahead of the launch of the new legislative session on Wednesday, and as jobless numbers mount, the Common Sense Institute released this analysis. And the bottom line is, the news is not good, said Chris Brown. Before the COVID-19 outbreak last winter, the trust fund had about $1.1 billion in the bank. But by November, it had dwindled by $1.2 billion, meaning it had fallen $114.35 million in the red, and that deficit could sink to more than $1 billion by the beginning of the next state government fiscal year that begins in July. For the fund to recover to its pre-pandemic solvency by 2028, employers' taxes and contributions will have to grow by an average of $420 million a year after 2023. Brown said Colorado is among the states with the most challenging budget issues, citing record high unemployment levels related to the COVID-19 pandemic shutdowns. The more the fund continues to deplete, the more Colorado's unemployment insurance program must tap into federal funding. And we know the feds don't have the money, so we're either borrowing it, well, we're borrowing it from our kids. And Colorado now ranks in the top 10 states in the greatest amount of federal loan money outstanding in both absolute and population-adjusted dollars. I think what we need to do, Alan, is to get our economy opened up.
Well, it's what we said before all this happened, right? It's a shocker that when you close businesses down, all of a sudden the state won't have any revenue, and a lot of these businesses won't even be open enough to pay taxes in the future. And it's incredibly sad that now, not only did we kill it, but now we're going to say, oh, and by the way, we need to tax you more because of what we did.
And how can you tax people more when they're struggling, as it is, and to try to get these businesses? What do you think, Steve?
Well, something you just said, we know the feds don't have it, so we're borrowing it from our kids. Alan, you're a new father. What does it make you feel like when you realize you're borrowing money from your son? How many months?
I'm probably borrowing from my son's kids at this point. I mean, the debt is insane. And you've said it a lot, Kim. How can we just keep punting this off to the next generation? When are we going to stand up and say, enough is enough? We need to fix this problem. We need to quit acting like there's free money and money growing on trees that we can suddenly, you know, a debt fairy to suddenly wish all this away.
Unless that's the goal. To break the system. I'm just noodling here, but you watch that debt clock, debtclock.org or .com, whatever it is, and watch the numbers spin. Wow.
It's chilling to think that might be the goal. Absolutely chilling. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, we need to be supporting our local businesses. And one of those great businesses is Hooters Restaurants, which is a partner of mine. And they have five locations: Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Loveland, and Colorado Springs. And there is dine-in. In fact, I drove by last night, and there's dine-in at the Lone Tree store, and or the restaurant, and patio dining with heaters at the others. They have all kinds of specials. Wednesdays are Wings Day, and I actually took advantage of that on this last Wednesday, and they have all kinds of specials. So go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com. We will be right back.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our most recent op-eds, our most recent podcast. Alan Thomas, your op-ed, Free to Be, will be in this week's newsletter, as well as I will be recording a podcast with Dr. Jill Vecchio. And so it'll be a couple of really cool things coming out in the newsletter. So we'll talk about that in the third and fourth segment. But I did mention to you that we wanted to talk about impeachment. And so you and I both read the complete text of Donald Trump's speech. And I would recommend, instead of listening to the news, that people look at that so that they can see that there was no call for insurrection, if you will.
Yeah, and it's not the easiest speech to read. It's obviously a speech he gives. He wanders and does what Trump does during a speech. And, you know, a lot of it was about him. He brought up the wall. He brought up everything he's done. But, man, yeah, when I read through that, I read through it with a mind of looking for where incitement could have come in, and was very disappointed that I didn't find anything close to what the media had talked about. But it's like my wife said over the weekend. She said, if there was things in his speech, you can bet they would have been on loop and replay all weekend on every media source talking about it. And it's no surprise now, reading his transcript, that it's rather difficult to justify what's going on in the House of Representatives.
Right, with the vote to impeach him. And impeachment does not mean conviction. It's amazing in America. You can accuse anybody of anything, but there should be a right to a trial with due process. And that trial actually will be going over to the Senate. And perhaps he might actually finally get to show the evidence that he has regarding the election. But and one of the things that they base this on then is they said that he incited people to go to the Capitol and to, attack or have an insurrection. And we're finding out that actually there were Antifa people there. But I saw a friend of mine this week, and she was there at the Capitol. And I asked Katie if she would come on to tell us about her experience, and she's on the line. Katie, welcome to the Kim Munson Show.
Good morning.
You were there.
I was there.
Okay, tell us what happened.
Well, I was actually one of the first people to head down to the Capitol. I was in the first wave. And but I did hear clearly what the president said. I hadn't known that that was part of what his plan was for everybody attending the rally, that we should go down to the Capitol and really let our voices be heard that were protesting the casting of the electoral votes. We felt there was fraud. Everyone in the crowd felt there was fraud. There were people from all over the country who had taken off work, driven in, Florida, Chicago, Texas. So when I got down to the Capitol, the first thing I noticed that was strange was that there was a, you know, that fencing barricade at the bottom of the lawn just below where the inauguration will be, just past the big waiting pool. And there were really only about six cops there. So,
Katie, and I want to stop you just a bit because
sure.
You set this up when I saw you earlier this week at the rally. You said there were, as you mentioned, people from all over America, but you said, first of all, that there were thousands and thousands of people there.
Oh, yeah. It's really, I kept asking people who were watching it on the news, can you get a sense of how big the crowd was? Because when I was at the Capitol looking back, the road, and I'm not sure what road that actually is, all the way back down to the monument and the White House, was completely packed. So I listened to Steve Bannon's War Room. They were putting it at anywhere between 350 and 600,000 people. I mean, the entire city was teeming with people there for this rally. And the city was very well prepared in terms of storefronts being barricaded off. You know, they had plywood on the plate glass in anticipation of something. So it was a really odd contrast to see that the Capitol only had around a handful of officers down at the Capitol standing at the bottom of the lawn trying to block people from coming up the lawn.
Okay, and Nancy Pelosi is in charge of the Capitol Police. I just want people to understand that. She is in charge of that. Katie, one other question. Were there porta potties?
No. There were two porta potties on the lawn that my sister and I spotted straight away, and we were like the first people actually to use them. But there were just porta potties, and I couldn't tell if it was for the workers who were setting up the scaffolding or not. But looking back, what I will say is true is there were people in the crowd with tear gas masks.
Now, this was when you got to the Capitol, right?
When I got to the Capitol, right.
But not when you were at the rally. There weren't people with gas masks, right?
No, I didn't see anybody wearing gas masks at the rally. But when I was down at the Capitol, there were definitely people prepared for some sort of altercation with the police. Some of them had, you know, standing right in front of me, those people with those long poles. They weren't flag poles. They were actually, you know, much thicker, much stouter that I've seen since then on the footage that they used to smash the glass. Where you would get those poles on the heels of the president allegedly inviting you to commit an insurrection or riot, I'm not really sure. I mean, they came with those, is what I'm saying. That they were prepared to tear gas the police. I saw people pepper spraying the cops, which I just thought was odd. It didn't seem like something that a MAGA supporter would do. These were people right up at the front, right at the periphery where the police were on one side and they were on the other. And so, noticing that there were people in the crowd that had come prepared to fight with the police, I had no knowledge of anything like that. I mean, nobody told me that. I was even surprised that we were being told to go down to the Capitol. But clearly what he was indicating was just go let them know while they're casting the votes that there is this loud group of people, a large group of people, who are unhappy with how this election has been conducted. They are not satisfied that the results reflect reality, and they want the elected officials to take note of them. And we literally just stood there waving these flags, but always at the edge of the intersection with the cops, there was something physical and somewhat violent going on. And then we heard, I think I was out there from 8 o'clock to about 3:30, we heard that a woman had been shot. And there was a blackout on the grounds. It was very hard to transmit information, to call people, to reach people. Internet service was, really poor. So at that point, people just started filing back to their cars, to their hotels, again, very peacefully. I've never attended a riot, but I've never seen a riot that ended with people just kind of walking back to their hotels and having some dinner. So none of what is being told matches up with what I saw, other than this violent group at the front who came prepared to struggle and fight with the police.
Okay, let's go back to the crowd a bit. You described the crowd as people of all different walks of life, all different ages,
yes,
all different races, all different descriptors,
yes.
And
yes.
And you never felt at any time that you had been encouraged to go down to the Capitol and do anything violent, correct?
No, absolutely not. Like I said, people took off work. These were ordinary Americans in their MAGA gear, flying flags, chatting with each other, listening, waiting to hear Donald Trump. There were people, this young couple, two women from Alabama, one who worked as a cook at the Waffle House. She was African American. Her partner was white. They had two kids. They had been completely excoriated, and people in their families had stopped speaking to them because they were there to support Donald Trump. A little kid behind me who was 21, worked at the Publix down in Florida. He drove up by himself, 10-hour drive. Very knowledgeable, very informed. That's what gave me encouragement, that there were a lot of young people. I mean, certainly predominantly people were my age, you know, middle-aged, but there were a lot of young people there were a lot of people who are, you know, tuned into what he represents, and the irony with how he's portrayed in the media, and then to go home and see on the news. I mean, everyone in my hotel, in the lobby, it was kind of like a, you know, the reception area after a wedding where everyone is staying at the same hotel and they're all talking about the event. And then we're watching on the news what happened when people got into the Capitol, and people were just sort of dumbfounded, like, when did that happen? You know, because that wasn't what anybody was seeing or experiencing or anticipating or thinking of doing themselves.
Well, Katie, we're getting short on time. This is fascinating. I want to make, first of all, Alan, do you have any questions for Katie?
No, thanks for coming on and relaying that.
Okay, so it's just so fascinating that you were one of the first ones down to the Capitol. And here we are having a historic vote regarding the Electoral College. People know emotions regarding this are hot. And you get down to the Capitol, and there's only 8 Capitol police or so, you said there. And then I've actually seen video where those Capitol police moved the fence and encouraged people to go on up towards the Capitol, which that is a big head scratcher. And Katie, I find it so interesting that this happened almost exactly at the time that they were starting to challenge the votes for Arizona. It seems to me, connecting dots, that it's a most interesting coincidence. Let me put it that way.
I would agree.
Yes. Okay. And so you said, and did you, a couple of things, did you see any buses arrive and dump any people off?
Not where I was, but where I was, I did see buses on the periphery, but it didn't seem that they were, I didn't see anybody get off of those buses. Where I was, it was just kind of all just filled in with people on foot.
Okay. And also my question regarding porta potties, because I was at the inauguration 4 years ago, and it was well organized. There were porta potties for people. I mean, you figure if there's 350 to 600,000 people. And I heard that the mayor of D.C. said, hey, we're not going to have any porta potties out there. So you didn't see any. I mean, they know there's going to be a lot of people there. And man, I tell you, one way to make it inconvenient for people is to not have a place for them to use the facilities. And you said you didn't see anything, right?
Well, just at the Capitol, there were only two. There were a handful down on the street where they had some truck vendors, not very many. Compared to the crowd size, it was certainly inadequate. But down at the Capitol, there were just two on the lawn, which I think, as I said, were there for the people who were working.
But where the rally was, you said there's a few, but nothing for a big crowd.
No, not for a big crowd. But okay. But what was clear is that all of D.C. was anticipating some huge event because everything was closed. All of downtown was closed. None of the shops were open. Nothing was open. Everything was completely 100% totally closed. So on the one hand, they were prepared for this large crowd, and there were no cars. Everyone was walking down the middle of the street. But on the other hand, the number of cops down there, as people walked up the Capitol lawn, I mean, I've seen more cops, you know, I mean, at the Safeway in Boulder.
Wow.
You know, just, yeah, I mean, and they said to this one guy who, like, kind of picked the fencing up and threw it to the side. I mean, that's how easy it was to do. They said, anyone who comes past this line will be arrested. And I thought, for what?
Okay. Well, Katie,
why?
We are running out of time on this. Okay. I am so grateful that you have shared your story with us. A final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners, Katie?
Just try and stay optimistic. These are really dark times, but the numbers of us are great.
Okay. Katie, thank you so much. I love the eyewitness account there. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You heard it right here on the Kim Munson Show. Eyewitness account of what happened. What's your thoughts?
Well, you know, I actually had spoken to someone the other day that had a friend that was there that recounted a very similar thing. The person they knew was up near the front. They didn't end up going in. They weren't one of the ones that went in, but they were close to the front. They said buses showed up, or maybe it was just a bus, and a whole bunch of people got off wearing Trump gear that certainly did not look like Trump supporters, and the Capitol Police basically pulled aside the fencing and said, go right on up the stairs. Just pulled it aside and let them go right on up. So,
And what happened is, I think there were then Trump supporters that followed them.
Right.
And so there was then they got the picture that they wanted, that to go with the title of Trump supporters storm the Capitol. And that was really what they were wanted to get. And then you see this whole thing play out. Steve, I don't know if I know that he had a relative that was there. It looks like he's on the line with somebody. Jason, did you want to say anything about your relative, Steve? We've got Jason on the line.
Oh, well, if Jason's on the line. No, seriously. I was amazed when I envisioned her. I knew she was going down there from Pennsylvania, that she would have to get up at 3 in the morning and hit the road, and you know, who knows what she would find. Well, they left at 7 a.m. They were in the city by 9 a.m. No problem parking, and, you know, she was totally caught up in the size of the crowd that was on the mall between the White House and the Washington Monument. It was just a sea of people. And then, there was the invitation, you know, to head towards the Capitol. No comments about, you know, go raise hell. No, nothing like that. And, they watched some of they were on both sides of the Capitol building, the west side and the east side. They saw a lot of weird things going on, and after a while, it kind of just faded out, and they walked away, went to their car, and came home.
Boy, Jason, it is astonishing, and we are in tumultuous times, and you will help people with their own economic well-being, and particularly during time like this, I'd recommend that people sit down with you and just kind of take their temperature regarding their investment portfolio, Jason. Here, I'm tripping over my words this morning, Jason, but I'd recommend that people sit down with you.
Well, it certainly could be helpful with prices up high like they are. If you've enjoyed some really good movement up, let's hope that you have, and you don't want to give it all back. If you're concerned about that and concerned about how much risk you can take on the downside, we can certainly help with that, give you a picture of where you might be and where you might be going. And I'll tell you, a lot of times, Kim, people are worried about doing a plan because they're afraid it's going to be bad news, and that certainly isn't the case. A lot of times it's very good news, and if the news isn't as good as you were hoping, there's always options and ways to fix problems and hopefully get you where you want to go.
Absolutely. And a good plan is the way to do that. People can reach you, Jason, at 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. And who knows what's going to happen between now and Monday morning, but we'll talk to you then. You have a great weekend.
You too, Kim.
We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Alan Thomas. He is an author. He's written an important op-ed, Free to Be. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You're going to get the first look at this great op-ed by Alan Thomas, Free to Be. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Alan, during the break, you and I were talking about Katie's experience. And firsthand, she was there. And it's important that we get that information out. But what's your thoughts about it?
Well, it's like I said, it's sad that we have to go to firsthand accounts, that we can't go to a news source or a journalist to compile some of these things, to ask some of these hard questions. And it really goes towards the heart of what this country was founded on. You know, the freedom of press was there as a watchdog, as a place where citizens could go to make informed decisions. And it's sad now that it has become what Trump derides it often and very frequently about, being fake news and being corrupt. And these conglomerate, massive media news sources do seem to be conspiring with each other to push one point and one point of view.
Well, and producer Steve, I know you have, we've talked about this, the frustration that people don't seem to have the intellectual curiosity or the the will to go out and try to seek the truth. And I know that you've been frustrated with some of those different conversations that you've seen on Facebook.
Frustrated doesn't even begin to describe what I feel, but there's two points to be made. Alan brought up one, but first, while Trump was speaking that morning in front of the White House there on the other side of the Iron Gate, he dared the press. He kept pointing back to him and says, turn your cameras around and look at this crowd. And they would not do it. They wouldn't give him that. The second point that Alan just brought up, if there would have been something in that speech, some soundbite that they could have used, they would have jammed that right down our throats. And they didn't because they couldn't. There wasn't anything there. That's the funny thing now about this media thing is, like, yeah, if there would have been there, they would have jammed it down our throats. But there was nothing to jam down our throats, so we heard crickets.
Well, good point. And Alan, I think that they are trying to make people feel that they are alone. That they certainly have tried to isolate us through this narrative regarding COVID-19. But I think it's important that people realize they're not alone. As Steve mentioned, if there was anywhere 350 to a half million people there, that's just a microcosm of people that were watching and care. And I think that they are trying to shut down our courage to think, our courage of our voices. And I think that segues kind of into your piece, Free to Be.
Yeah, but before we do that, the big thing is they even did that over the summer to people, BLM, that they supposedly agree with. They covered the riots and the violence and the looting. And instead of talking about what thousands of people were actually peacefully protesting, because over the summer there were lots of peaceful protests before the mob took over, instead of talking about that, we talked about the violence. And instead of talking about the hundreds of thousands of people who gathered to let their voice be heard about election fraud, we're now talking about this small group of people who did violent acts. And it is sad that we are now distrusting our citizens as much as we are.
Well, and with that, before we get to your piece, I just realized we had the soundbite that Patty had found it. Dave Rubin had tweeted this out. And this is a number of different Democrat politicians, a number of mainstream media, and it's about 2.5 minutes long. And, of course, Robert De Niro is in there. And I think we got it just about. We're not going to play the whole 2.5 minutes. But this seems like it is inciting violence. You and I both read the speech, Alan, and we didn't see any inciting violence there. But this is your mainstream media, movie stars, and politicians. Hit it, Steve.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings. Nancy Pelosi. The country, maybe there will be.
People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
Enemies of the state.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite.
I think that's
and
is that
peaceful.
Como?
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, we kick.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most
that's
of them
Don
radicalized right, up to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. I said, even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the
and
hell out of
him. That's Joe Biden. Let's stop there.
People in the face.
When was the last time?
It seems like that might be inciting people to do something violent. What do you think, Alan?
Well, this is government, right? It's our ruling political class who tell you to do one thing and they get to do another. It's very unsurprising. It's what they've been doing overtly, very in the public eye for the past year. And they're just getting emboldened to continue doing it.
Alan, I've said that one of the good things about Donald Trump, whether or not you like him or not, is the mask has come off. It's been unveiled. What's been percolating underneath the surface for really your lifetime. It started way back, Woodrow Wilson, regarding the progressive era. So that's a little over 100 years ago. And then you get to the 60s, the 70s. But in the 80s, it became more overt. And I was driving down the road the other day, and I saw somebody with the equal sign on the back of their car. And I've always been intrigued because America is a place that we believe that all men are created equal with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But many people, and I think many people that have that sign on the back of their car, they do want people to be treated equally under the law, I hope. But that's not what is happening. But so let's go. I want to get to your comment on that, and then we'll get to your op-ed.
Well, it goes perfectly into it. We've been trained by progressive ideas that even though we're equal, we need to not treat our neighbor as equal. We need to distrust our neighbor and trust the government to fix all of our wrongs. And we need to trust the government. And the government is interested in one thing. It's the consolidation of power. That's why Thomas Jefferson said we need to shackle it down and bind it. Because throughout history, if you look through history, the one thing that men and women love to get and abuse is power over other people. And that's not to say that they do so with bad intentions on their heart, but when you get power, it's very difficult to rein it in and to check it. And progressivism teaches you and trains you that the government knows what's best for your life, and the government knows how to run your life, and you need to not trust your neighbor to run theirs. And the point that it very conveniently skips over is that the government is made up of people like you and me. It's made up of people like your neighbors, your bureaucrats, your regulators, your politicians. They all think and act the same way you do, but we kind of ignore that unchanging human nature element, and it has detrimental effects to you and I and to freedom and liberty and our ability to choose to live our lives.
So let's drill down just a little bit more on that. When you say that these politicians and bureaucrats, that they are just like you and I. I think that you maybe mean that they are human beings with the faults that each of us have. So the idea that when they get into office that they don't have that, and then to give them the power to make decisions about our lives. Am I getting to the...
Yeah, that's the core. We act as if they're infallible. And the other thing, we've said it a lot about policy, is good intent doesn't make good policy. Well, the desire to do good doesn't necessarily mean that it will do good.
Mm-hmm.
And the politicians especially have gotten very good at exempting themselves from the rules and laws and orders that they enact on the American people. And how is it not healthy to have a distrust on people who are unwilling to suffer the consequences of their own legislation?
You've really nailed that. When I was on city council, and we'd have people come forward and they would make presentations that the city should spend money on this or do money on, or make a decision on this. And I always tried to use the litmus test of, if this was my very own money, is this something that I would spend money on? And most of the time, the answer would be no. And that is, and we need to, I think, take a look at that, because if you started to treat all of this and those policies, if these policies, for example, I did an op-ed last week, and I said that there's a lot of people that are still getting maybe their retirement checks, their pension checks, or they're working from home. And so they are still getting their paychecks. They're like, what's the big deal shutting down all these businesses? But my gosh, if in fact their checks would be decreased by 60%, all of a sudden they might be paying attention to these policies that are really affecting the other person. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's the core of the issue of who to trust with these sort of things. And obviously self-governance is the most personal and the closest to me that I can get. But it is funny how people like to suddenly just jump to, oh, we need our Congress to enact these laws, as opposed to, hey, maybe I should go to my school board and change this, or maybe even just go to the principal and change things within my child's school, as opposed to wishing this upon every single school in America. Why don't I start locally and try and influence these things? Because if you can't even start locally and change things you want to change, then why in the world should we make it, or why in the country should we make it a countrywide mandate or regulation when it doesn't even apply locally? And that's kind of the encouragement through the article, is start with yourself. And if it applies to your life, great, do it yourself. If it doesn't apply to your neighbor, why force them to do it? And just kind of work your way up from there. But the tendency is to say, well, the government, the federal government is going to change this and help me and do all that. And the tendency is just to jump right away and allow and encourage these politicians to do what they're doing right now.
Let's go to break. This is such an important conversation. Again, this op-ed will be rolled out in my newsletter this weekend, and it'll be on the website. Before we do that, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great partner of the Kim Munson Show. Hal Van Herke has a real heart for small business, and he's going to be in studio next week. But Castlegate Knife and Tool has knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you're a chef, a sportsman, a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Be sure and check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We'll be right back with author Alan Thomas.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I love hearing from you. Sometimes it takes me a few days to get back with you just because there's a lot going on. But I will get back with you because I really appreciate each and every one of you. And I appreciate my guest immensely. He is a millennial. He's an author. And he has a really important op-ed that'll be coming out this weekend in our newsletter, Free to Be. And a couple of things. You said that regarding governance, We need to start with ourselves. And probably the founders thought that as well. If we can't govern ourselves individually, our own selves, how the heck do we think that somebody else can govern us, I guess. And so you have written in here something about government doesn't know about me as an individual.
Right. And you hear about it so often about special needs kids, how their needs get overlooked. And it really cuts to the quick that government doesn't live my life. And a regulator in Washington, D.C. can't know about everything that goes into it. They can't know that my dietary needs are different than my wife's and different than my kids. They can't know what's best on how to educate my child and all the struggles he may have in the future. They can't know my health levels to know what to mandate for me to eat or drink. They just lack that omniscience. And it's okay to say that, and it's okay to question these regulators who want to act like they know everything that goes into your life and all the experiences you've had. That's a healthy skepticism to have, because we are all very different but also very equal in the fact that we have this ability to choose how to live our lives, and we need to be allowed to have that choice as long as we don't take away from the choices of others. And that's what regulations typically do. They take away your ability to choose how to live your life best. And these top-down mandates without providing any sort of exemptions to account for real-life people, that's a huge problem that we have right now. And it's wrong of us to distrust our neighbors who may have these overwhelming exemptions to what you think is best for their lives, and not sit back and say, hey, you know what, have that empathy and that wherewithal to say, you know what, something may have happened in their life where, even though I think this is best for them, they may have already lived that. They may have already seen that failure of that idea or that action that you think is best for them. They may have already lived that and said, you know what, that doesn't work for me. Sitting in a classroom shackled to a book and a teacher isn't the best way that I learn. Maybe I do need to go to a trade school or vocational school. Maybe I do need to do X, Y, or Z differently. We need to have that empathy and allow our, and maybe even learn from our neighbors and learn from our fellow citizens about their life experiences and why they don't believe these mandates or edicts or decrees are best for their life.
Okay, you mentioned one thing. You mentioned was special needs children or people with special needs, or it could be any kind of a descriptor. It used to be in America, taxes were low, and people used charity to help their neighbors. And then all of a sudden, government gets involved in that. And I had Reggie Carr on, who has a nonprofit, My Mission Hope, and he was helping a family at Christmas time that, quote unquote, had fallen through the government cracks. And it was individual helping individual. He, with some of the members of his family, came in and provided food for this family because they'd fallen through the cracks. Government can't be the answer for everybody. We need to look to ourselves and to our neighbors instead of government to do that. And we need to get rid of these big government programs and do this ourselves. We've got, maybe about 2 minutes. What's your final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, to go off of that, it's a funny spiral, isn't it? The government takes more taxes, and then you say, well, they have my taxes, so I want them to spend it the way I want them to spend it. And so you ask for more government, you ask for the government to do things your way, and then the government says, well, we need to take more taxes to do it that way. And it's this big spiral of, instead of having the wherewithal to stand back and say, you know what, if I had more money, if you took less of my money, I could do this with it. We instead ask them and force the government or force our congressmen to say, we need more government force to force you to provide, or we need the government to provide this program to fix this issue. And, you know, our friend Dr. Kranewitter always asks, name one government program that has ever said, we solved that issue and we don't need any more money to fix it, right? So government is really good at saying, I need more taxes and I need more of myself to fix your issues. And we've kind of fallen prey to this idea that, hey, I'm paying so much in taxes. I'm getting taxes and fees everywhere. why don't you do what you said you were going to do with it? And we just continue to advocate for more and bigger government, as opposed to saying, you know what, government, step back. Let me live my life. Quit mandating my choices. I know what's best for me. I have this self-preservation instinct. I have these failures, these successes that I've lived through. I know what's best for me. And I know that may not necessarily be best for you, Kim, or for anyone else in my life. But for me, I trust it. So we need to start trust. We need to distrust our government more than we even trust our citizens. So if you have a healthy distrust of your fellow citizens, boy, I sure hope you distrust government to the nth degree.
A whole bunch more. Alan Thomas, it always goes quick when you're in studio. It's great to have you here. Thanks so much for being here.
And thanks again for having me.
And again, that op-ed, you'll be able to find that in my newsletter that comes out this weekend. Sign up for that at kimmunson.com. And then it will be on the website as well. And so it's just great to have you here. Our quote for today is from Mary Pickford. And she said this: "The past cannot be changed, but the future is yet in your power." So my friends, today, be grateful. Read great books. Think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music. Communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals and, like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. And remember, my friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
Climbing, twisting, turning.